estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 483. I'm Adam and fantastic! And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
That won't last. He's gay and she's an alien.
Debbie Melrose.
I'm in my dressing gown.
Oh, Debbie, you took mine.
That's what she said.
It's okay.
And Mary Lang.
There's a stranger in my bedroom.
yeah, maybe I should have done that one. Yes, this week we're finally, after several years, embarking on the new Who part of the journey.
Master.
You got that far. Well done.
Thank you very
Master,
much.
Master, just slightly over 8 years.
Okay, thank you. I knew you'd come up with a precise amount, or almost precise, but the just slightly is really just an almost precise amount.
You want specific?
No, I don't.
It was January 9th, 2012.
Splendid, right?
Oh, wait, that's 9 years.
Yeah.
Oh.
Got so that wrong then, didn't you?
Yeah, they're getting ready for the 10th anniversary here.
Yeah. Right then, okay, so, what's that funny noise? Is that me?
I think it was me, sorry. Yeah, an email just arrived and I can't turn the volume down for him.
Oh, I see. No, that doesn't matter. I'm just going to...
Why not?
Because I haven't gone looking to do it and I
take
can't
no
be...
Take no notice of him. Just because Kirsty's not on, he's going to be picking on you instead of Kirsty. So don't take any notice of him. Don't get embroiled in the in Planet Kirby. Right then. Let's see what comes. I'm just going to click on the video thingy. Some stuff's come through. I'm not going to take any notice of you lot, but Laurie Nix says, hello, all huggies. And then, why is Facebook asking me to join the broadcast? Well, it's because it's the way the... Facebook app works on the iPhone. Adam doesn't need any more commentary from the peanut gallery, and I didn't rewatch. What have you got to say for yourself, Laurie? And then Ian said, lots of planets have a north. That's the quote I could have done, actually. I should have done, to be fair. I don't think anything else, anybody else has said anything else, because it's coming through on my thing up there, but it means I have to lean forward and do scrolling and stuff. I'm hoping to use that to see it. So we can now go ahead with Rose, which I will try and... This hasn't got a fast forward button. This is why, like I say, I wanted to do it via my iTunes. Where's my magic wand gone? I've lost my Elder wand. Hang on. Oh, here it is. Sorry. Ooh, just bumped my microphone. Sorry, listeners. I just bumped my head on the microphone. I just scratched my back with my... This is what the Elder wand was designed for. Back scratching. Oh, it's better. Oh, right.
Really?
Okay, right. So we begin with the brand spanking new title sequence, which does make you feel a bit ill as you're flying through the smoky
and the Merkold theme song.
Yeah. And it begins with a shot from space of the moon, and then it swings around to the Earth. And then they did the close-up on the clock, the digital clock by Rose's bed. I thought of Sonny and Cher playing their tune, and then they say, and then it's Groundhog Day, because that clock appears twice during the episode. And then a sort of fancy clip of...
Master?
That's not bad, Kirby.
If I had had a chance to do my research ahead of time, unfortunately I had to repair a dishwasher.
Oh dear.
I would have come up with a number of stories that have started with that same zoom in to the Earth.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I did think that there was remember there was a McCoy story that started with a shot of the Earth from space, wasn't there?
Yes.
Which also reminded me of this one and vice versa. So we have Rose has got up. She's ready for work. She's getting to work, and she works at Henrik's, which sounds like a cross between Harrods and some other shop. What Deb noticed, mentioned while she was turning up for work that she'd look a bit scruffy with this sort of pink hoodie. And I did point out that the rest of the staff at the shop also wore pink hoodies, so maybe that was some sort of...
Oh, they do?
What?
Because I had had that question 9 years ago, because I was wondering if that was a uniform or not.
Yeah, well, that's what Deb was pointing out. She felt it was a bit scruffy for somebody working in a clothes shop.
It was 2005. What do you want?
I don't know. I'm just saying what she gleaned from those particular sequences. Anyway, so
it's just typical for the staff of a store to be wearing whatever it is, you know, being promoted.
Yeah.
But they really fast forwarded through the day. So she had a morning at work, and then she had a lunch break with Mickey, and then she's back at work, does a very, very quick afternoon. I wish all my working days went as quick as this. And then she's just about on her way out the door, and somebody says, come on, Rose, you've got to do the lottery syndicate. So she rather unenthusiastically travels down in the lift to the basement.
Okay, that's a question. Why is she taking the lottery money there?
Maybe the bloke who looks after the warehouse is the bloke that's doing the lotto.
Wilson!
No, I read an explanation of this is like employees of any workplace will put their money together to enter a lottery. Yeah. So she must be taking the money to the guy.
Yeah, she is. She's taking it to the guy.
Yeah, the bloke who's organized. Basically, the man
he does the entry, and then they split the...
Yeah,
the
he's price. The man that goes and... to actually to news agents or wherever, and then
syndicate
does their set numbers and hopes of the best. Anyway, so she's down in the warehouse, which looks like a place in Cardiff that may
amazing.
Appear in later episodes of Doctor. Yes, Kirby.
I said amazing. Looks like a place in Cardiff.
Looks like a place. It actually looks like the concourse at the Millennium Stadium. Funny enough, but
it probably is. But I didn't have a chance to look that information up because
what
I was working on a dishwasher.
Lillian Robbins says you're not plastic, are you? Probably, yeah.
Yes, I probably am.
Anyway, so she's skulking around the concourse at Millennium Stadium, where they just happen to have put lots of dummies and mannequins around, and a door shuts and everything gets a little bit spooky, and she's running around trying to find this bloke who's gonna Wilson, yeah, that's what I got. When it was named Wilson, that's cropped up in a couple of different
one of my cats is called Wilson.
Yeah, there's the little volleyball thing from, you know, Castaway, is it, that the Tom Hanks film that was called?
Yes.
Wilson.
Tom Hanks, yeah.
And the dog in Friday Night Dinner is also called Wilson. So it's obviously a very popular name in various genres. Anyway, so at some point, all the mannequins start walking towards Rose. I've got an itchy neck. You think, oh, she's done for. But it's quite funny where she goes, oh, stop messing about, blah, blah, blah. And then out of nowhere... a hand grabs her. Fortunately, not a plastic hand on the first occasion. And it's the doctor.
Master. Master.
No, it's the doctor.
It's the basement of the University Hospital of Wales.
No, so I got it wrong. Is that what you're trying? You really wanted to find out that I got it wrong, didn't you? they run, and the doctor sort of arranges a bit of an explosion after they go in the lift and go upstairs, and then some. One of my quotes was going to be, "Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life." So basically, yes, I think they part again. She's suddenly out in the cold, and there's a big bang, which was quite interesting at the time.
Where's Sheldon and company?
She does run past the TARDIS before this big bang.
And the music goes, ooh.
Yeah. And I did notice that the Bad Wolf music as she went past it. I forgot what I was going to say now. I'll stop it now.
Yes, I distracted you. I'm sorry.
There was a big bang.
Well, a little bit of trivia is that Russell T. Davies wanted the TARDIS to look kind of battered, like it had been through the Time War or whatever.
Yeah.
But But Julie Gardner overruled him. She said, if we're bringing this back for the first time, we want the TARDIS to look really good.
Yeah, I agree with Julie.
Which I agree.
The TARDIS would have repaired itself after so much damage anyway. And it usually does something like that when the Doctor regenerates, funny enough, doesn't it?
Well, look back at some of the Fourth Doctor time, how horrible the TARDIS looked for years and years and years.
Yeah. Anyway, what I was going to say was the fact that, you know, this big explosion, and there has always been many explosions in Doctor Who over the years, so I'm pretty sure they wanted to make the first one in the new Who to be a particularly, you know, effective one, and I think they did rather well with that. Anyway, so Rose goes home, and Mickey reads on the news that there's been a bit of an explosion at her place of work, and worries a little bit, and is very relieved to find her alive and well, and gives her a hug that Rose herself doesn't look particularly enthusiastic to be to be receiving, shall we say. So there's this plastic arm which Rose has taken home with her, the one that
it's armless,
the one that the Doctor gave her anyway, that Mickey throws it in a bin, and then it's back to the Groundhog Day. They say your love won't pay the rent. Rose looks really sexy actually when she wakes up in these particular scenes, so she's unemployed again, and she just sort of gets up and has a bit of a boring breakfast conversation with her sexy mum, who somebody said MILF at some point. I don't think it was me, but I have to say, Neil James says, "Hi guys, God, I love Eccleston. Run for your life."
Adam,
yes.
If you watch the program on Netflix about swearing with Nicolas Cage, MILF is definitely in there.
There's lots of swear words that are in there on that program. I've watched the first three episodes and I got a bit bored of hearing swear words. It just sort of, but I mean, I will watch it again when I'm really, really bored and I've got nothing else to watch. There was there's a program I'm watching at the moment about a very interesting program about life, not life after death, what they call it, near-death experiences. Really, really interesting. Where did I get up to before I got told off for saying the M word?
I didn't tell you off on it.
It was a sort of a slight, very kind. Deb's very good at telling people off in a kind and the sort of way that make you feel disappointed in yourself, sort of way. Very skilled. In that on your Deb.
I don't mean to be.
And then, anyway, there's something happening at the front door, and I love the way that Rose goes down to the cat flap and just flips it up, and the Doctor's head's there. And the Doctor says, "What are you doing here? I live here." That sort of thing. And he gets invited in, and then we have that brilliant scene at the door with Jackie when she starts flirting with him, which I thought, bloody hell, that's really tarty. She just met the bloke, but it's still really, really funny. Uh-huh. And I will say that if that were me, I would say, I'll just shut the door behind me and say, "Well, thank you." No, I wouldn't really. I wouldn't. Honestly.
Plus, we see the sonic screwdriver.
Don't get too excited, Kirby. Jackie didn't get excited about it. I would imagine she would have done. Well, I've got the actual sonic screwdriver here that he was using, so I bet you haven't got this one.
That's no, I don't. I only have
there it is.
Two of the same.
And it works. Good, isn't it? So I've dropped my
pin. I have two of the 11th.
Elder wand again. You're distracting me. Yeah, so the Doctor goes past a mirror and says, something about his ears, which implies he's just regenerated. But, of course, he hasn't just regenerated, because we see lots and lots of pictures of him in various different guises. But I do love the fact when he...
Master.
Yes,
he has just regenerated. He's a time traveler. Those are future things that he does. He could have done those when he pops out of the room after he talks to Rose, which is the actual theory.
Or it might have been he's not seen himself in the mirror for quite a long time.
No, I tend to agree with Kirby. Imagine that. That those are adventures that he could go on at any time.
Yeah, I know that. I accept that. Okay. He's just regenerated.
Because we see those, they happened in the past. Well, that past happened.
Okay.
But not yet for him.
Okay. So he's just regenerated. And yeah, because obviously we see the regeneration eventually, in about 10 eventually, years later. And then the plastic arm grabs the Doctor by the face for a little bit of comedy, relief, I suppose, comedy relief. And then
Doctor by the neck.
Pardon?
He grabs the Doctor by the neck.
Yes.
He grabs Rose by the face.
Oh, sorry, I got it around the wrong way, didn't I? And then he gets it off himself, and then it hangs in midair, and then attaches to Rose's face. But thankfully, the sonic screwdriver disables its connection to wherever it's connected to. And after that, the Doctor and Rose have a stroll through this sort of high-rise estate. Now, I did notice it was very, very similar to the estate. Remember when Tennant had to go off and... what do the Americans say? Ten had to go off and regenerate, and he bumps into Rose before all this kicks off.
Right, it's the same one.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do love that, because I do love a bit of consistency in the continuity. So thank you, Kirby, for
the lid step flats.
Okay, Kirby, don't push it too far, because I had my hand over the bell at that point for a very helpful bit of confirmation.
Another bit of trivia is that the reason that he and Billy go on this little walk and talk about how the Doctor can feel the earth and all that is these are added in scenes later,
right?
Because the episode was running too short. So they had to go back and film this walk through the estate scenes to fill some time.
Okay, we're still a good scene, though.
Another bit of trivia. These are actually two different estates. It's the lid step flats and the channel view flats.
Pushing a bit too far now, Kirby. Thank you. But it's a really good scene. very dramatic, and it did sort of allow us to sort of, get a feel of the Ninth Doctor and his persona. They part their ways again, and Rose goes off to see Mickey, and a bit of rumpy pumpy is implied, but he doesn't get that because he wants the computer, and he says, "Don't look at my email." That could have been my quote. Oh, hang on. Laurie Nick says, "Bell, bell, bell." Are my flies undone? Oh, Ben Shoveler says, "I'm home." Right. I didn't get the rest of the message, so I shall see if we can bring him in, shall we? Don't say no, Kirby, because I'm going to do it anyway.
Oh, why would I say no?
Because you're awkward sometimes. I think that's what we agreed, didn't we, when we had that private conversation about... I wasn't supposed to mention that, was I? Right then, so which is the right one? Let's try this one. I don't know if this is the right one. Soon find out. If he doesn't answer, it's not the right one, isn't it? I got a little smiley face off Laurie. And it's the wrong one, because it said Ben Shoveler unavailable. Let's try this one. this looks a bit more promising. Let's try that one. He's got too many Skype accounts. He needs to narrow it down a little bit. He really has. Right, I can't look it up on my phone, because my phone's up there. Cues Ben's entrance music. My fire's getting too hot. I'm going to turn it off. It's taking all this time to warm this room up. Right, is he on? Hang on. I'll load up my messenger. This is typical 20 megabyte stuff, this. What do you say? I'm at home, got till 8. Oh, that's all right, isn't it? Right. So I'd better put down, trying to... That says tie to call you. All right, there we go. They're still trying to ring him, actually, so... While that's happening. So the Rose is looking on searchwise.net. Does that exist, Kirby?
Not anymore. I was about to talk to you about that. It did exist. Apparently, the BBC Wales were the people behind it. And since the BBC is no longer, since they encourage independent production instead of doing a lot right there, they no longer use it. They have used it... 3 times in this one, in Thin Ice, and...
He's in!
Hold on, hold on.
Oh.
Hold on.
What?
Hold on.
You can't hear us, can you?
And
no,
also,
Hero World.
Also in Torchwood Series 1. Ooh, combat.
What, searchwise.net, you mean?
Yes.
Kirby?
Master?
Ah!
Thank you. May I have another?
No. Hello, Ben.
Yeah, I remember back when, back in like 2006, I actually used searchwise.net and noodled around in it.
Appropriate filling there, Kirby. Well done. Hello, Ben.
Hello. Sorry, just sorting out volumes of things and getting you connected into the speakers so I can actually hear you, because at my age, I'm deaf.
Mm.
Are you there?
No.
No.
You are? If I turn my amp up, say something else?
Something else.
Something else.
Oh, you lot are so funny. Goodness me. Yeah, right. Okay, I'm here. And I am now ready.
No, you're not here. I'm here.
Oh, no, you're there.
No, well, Ben's,
no, you're
Ben's
there.
All right, shut up. Ben's arrival allows me to segue somewhat into how Ben and I became friends. And this has probably been told on the show before, but I'm going to tell it again.
You know, I was telling this story, Adam.
I'm going to tell a story.
This week.
Once upon a time, in 2005, funny enough, Ben was a DJ, or radio presenter, on a radio station called The Saint. Great
That's
name for a radio
biggest.
Station, has to be said. And while I was working in Porchester, I used to listen to The Saint throughout the day, and he did the drive time show, which, when does a drive time show start? Is it 1 p.m. or something like that?
No, I did the afternoon show first.
Yeah, the drive time show, I just said that.
No, it was afternoons. It was 2 till 6.
2 till 6, a drive time show. Anyway,
drive time. Yes, I agree with Master.
Thank you.
I'd have called it more afternoon, but
anyway, the 2 till 6 show. Anyway, so Ben would be funny. That's funny, that, isn't it? He was actually quite a funny presenter, very entertaining. But that suddenly, randomly, that my ears pricked up when he talked about the impending return of Doctor Who.
I remember the link.
Yes. And the fact that he had managed to acquire a bootleg copy of Rose 2 days, or even more, before it went onto the telly. Isn't that right, Ben?
Yeah, it was about a week before, actually.
It was a week?
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of people had that.
Yes.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I was one of the lucky ones who knew where to look.
So, at that point, I then became a shoveler stalker.
Because at the same time as doing the radio show...
There must be a better way of saying shoveler stalker.
I'm fine with it. at the same time as doing the radio, I was also hosting the Southampton Football Club Fan Club Association thingy, supporters club.
You mean the call-in? Oh, yeah, the club. That's right. Yeah, so that's when...
That's where we met, mate.
I managed to become a member of the club so I could stalk Ben a bit more. And stalked my way onto his... when he used to have his baked beans lunch, onto his dinner table to where conversations would ensue.
Yeah,
and then much comedy and Doctor Who discussions. And then, of course, when I found out he was actually wearing a Southampton shirt while being a Manchester United fan, things did slightly go off
course a
little bit.
Hey, it was a free
bit.
Southampton shirt that I was given for working at the radio station. And to be fair, though, Adam, Southampton, if you're allowed them, have always been my second team.
All right. We'll
they're
give you
the club
one.
That my dad used to take me to watch when I was younger and wanted to watch a football match for my birthday, because Southampton were the nearest First Division club, as it was at the time. So, you know, I have got a history with them, and I'm, you know, they have always been.
Well, I'm glad of it, because then I managed to gain a friend out of it. Anyway, Laurie Nick says, when will we get live video of Ben's dungeon shed? You've got to do a video film. It'll be live, but maybe
hold
Ben
on a
could
second.
Take all the rude stuff, all the pornographic stuff out of shot.
No, if you listen to his radio show and he's live streaming it, you can see his man shed then.
I can't see it. I'm too busy. Oh, there he is. I can see it. But the viewers can't see this, Ben.
Can they not?
No, we can see it, though.
That's me FIFA. So, well,
you're frozen. This is really pushing the boundaries of my blimmin' bandwidth.
You'll have to describe what you can see then, Adam.
Your nose at the moment.
Oh, hold on. You're looking the wrong way around then. Hold on. Can I swap it over? I'll tell you what. I'll just turn the camera around. There you go. That's what I'm looking at.
I can see a computer monitor with a view of a stadium of some, and another computer monitor with a football match I should be watching. Because all the matches this week have been terrible. Either 1-0s or 1-0s. They're boring.
This afternoon's match was a bit rubbish.
Oh, God. Maybe I should have won that game. Anyways, yes. Okay, right, back to Doctor Who. Sorry, we should really... Anyway, so that's basically me and Ben loosely became friends off the back of this particular episode of Doctor Who. And which I'm just about to return to. What?
One day.
What do you mean one day?
One day you popped the question. The question that you've been wanting to ask me for a long time. You've been watching me, looking at me and thinking...
What was it? Yes, it was. What was it like to drop Peter Osgood's Cup winner's medals? That's the question.
Oh, that is the worst moment of my entire life. Seriously, that is the worst.
I just wish I'd been filming it, because that would have been made a great TikTok. But anyway, right,
just to fill in the gaps of the story, right? Peter Osgood was a classic Chelsea and Southampton footballer. He won the FA Cup. The only time Southampton had won the FA Cup in 1975.
I got all ear wrong. No Saints fans watch this show, so we're okay with that one.
And he came into the supporters club after a match, and he brought with him his FA Cup medal, which was in its little rectangular box. And it was, like, as medals come, it had a little cushion thingy underneath it. And I thought it was attached. And so I kind of lifted the box up past parallel to show everyone in the club what the medal looked like so they could try and get a look at it. And as I lifted it up a little bit too much, the medal tipped out of the box. And I was on a stage, it was only about a foot high, but still. And the medal tipped out of the box and tumbled to the ground.
I'll never forget the noise.
Although for you, Adam, that took probably 0.3 of a second. For me, that took 15 minutes to fall to the ground. It is the most agonizing time of my entire life. And I freely admit that openly and readily to a lot of people, that is my most embarrassing moment. I still cringe.
I've got some video of the aftermath of that, actually. I found it on my computer the other day. Maybe I should post that on the 20 megabyte page at some point.
But
because it's quite funny.
To be fair, Peter Osgood, although he gave me the worst daggers I have
ever did. I remember them.
Anything you've ever received off your partners for doing anything bad. 50 times worse than that. He gave me these daggers and I just felt so small and so, oh man.
Yes, but we did actually, when me and you went to watch a match a while after that, he was up in the director's box, wasn't he? And he came down to have a chat with you. So he didn't hold it against you. So,
No, he didn't at all. And I did a radio show with him. I produced it as he was doing talking.
Yes.
And the last radio show he ever did, he left the studio. And as he was leaving the actual door for the building, I always went to see him out. He turned around and he said, I'll tell you what, Ben, sometime we're going to go out for a drink. He died 2 days later.
Mm.
I was so gutted, and he was such a lovely, lovely, lovely man. Anyway, that's not very much Doctor Who related, but that's how we met.
Yes, it was. That's how we met, and I'm very glad of it. So back to Doctor Who. So, this... I do like... We're at the bit where Rose is borrowing Mickey's computer to search up for the Doctor. And I do love the graphics they use, because exactly what search engines were like in those days. And she finds some very badly photoshopped pictures of the Doctor. And then a particular site that says, have you seen this man? Contact me.
He was there, surely. They're not photoshopped, no.
No, anyway, have you seen this man? Contact Clyde.
Master, yes. That was the picture I used for asking for feedback. Woo, whoop.
Thank you, Kirby. So, Mickey's got a very cool VW Beetle, which he drives Rose to Clive's house. And she goes into Clive. The little boy actually answers the door. Is very familiar. I'm sure I've seen him grown up in something. Kirby is now going to find out. But anyway, so, Clive greets Rose and takes her out the back for a trip to his man cave.
That's what I say.
And when I looked at him in his little man cave, I just visually thought of your little man cave, Ben. It sort of gave me that sort of...
His man cave is a lot bigger and a lot more wooden than my man cave.
Sizes and everything, Ben.
Well, that's what your wife is.
So anyway,
sorry,
he's got lots
sorry,
of...
Sorry, mate.
He's got lots of very cool Photoshop pictures of the Doctor wearing exactly the same facial expression at various historical events, including Kennedy's assassination. But it's a very cool and exciting moment to watch that. And then while waiting outside in the very cool Yellow Beetle, Mickey sort of gets a bit bored and has a little walk around and notices some plastic bins.
Sorry, Adam, can I just jump in?
No, what, in the car?
I just completely agree with what you've just said there.
What?
The bit in the shed, on the first episode back, to have all of that missed history of Doctor Who just come back at you in that one scene like that, I thought it was absolutely, and I'm going to use this word, and I'd like you all to applause.
Yes.
It was. I thought it was absolutely wonderful.
So, it's good to hear you positive, Kit, Ben.
That's because it's RTD who wrote it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Adam.
I forgot to mention that Laurie Nick said, locker room talk ensues. That's about our conversation earlier on. Hey, so one of the bins...
If you want to hear the locker room talk, then what about the wet towel story, Adam?
No. Right then. So one of the bins starts wobbling, and Mickey, I think, thinks there's a cat inside it. So he goes out to investigate. And then we have that really, really funny scene.
Isla loves the
stretchy plastic. I'm going to skip past Rose's continued conversation.
Worst
with
scene in the entire
Clive.
Story.
What did you say?
Like, burping bin.
Oh, the burping bit was unnecessary. I agree. But the rest of it was fine.
Oh, Isla loved that bit.
Yeah, that was for the little kids, wasn't it?
Yeah, we'll live with that.
It lasted less than a second, so I think we can accept that. You could actually miss that if you happened to burp yourself at that particular time. You wouldn't even notice it. Anyway, so...
Oh, you notice it. Master?
You notice it, Master.
Adam McCoy, who played Clive's son, stopped acting in 2007. The last thing he was in an episode of Casualty and something called Mobile.
I know where I've seen him before then. Rose, Doctor Who.
Before Rose, he was in Holby City, Mercy Beat, and
Brookside.
Yeah, all
right, that'll do.
He's in lots of Brookside.
Yeah, will you stop reading Wikipedia?
Yeah.
I'm not reading Wikipedia.
Anyway, so Mickey has a bit of trouble with this bin. Then eventually Rose comes out and doesn't notice that he looks completely different when she steps back in the car. It proves that she doesn't really look at him very often.
And also, she was so amazed at what she'd just seen and tied up in what she'd just been talking about. I think that's another reason that she may not have noticed he'd turned to plastic.
Yeah.
And she doesn't seem all that into him anyway.
Yeah, it does feel like a relationship on its uppers, doesn't it, in this episode? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Also, when Mickey drives away in that really beautiful, cool Beetle zigzagging across the road.
I want that car.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Zigzagging across the road reminded me somewhat of having the Benny Hill music playing in the background. anyway, so he very romantically takes Rose to a restaurant, and we get another funny scene in which initially it's... he's sort of asking her what he knows, she knows about the Doctor, with a very sinister face. And then a waiter turns up and offers him a drink. And of course it's the Doctor, and he shoots Mickey in the face. Oh, sorry, plastic Mickey in the face with a cork. So we see another very clever bit of graphics they'd never would have been able to do in classic Doctor Who. And then Rose then sets off the fire alarm by just putting a palm against the fire alarm thingy. Normally you have to break the glass, but
didn't have the budget. Didn't have the budget for that.
No. And then
glass.
What's left, because his head gets pulled off, plastic Mickey's head, he turns his hand into like little axes or whatever they're called, shovels or something, and starts smashing the place up. And the Doctor and Rose end up in this backyard where the TARDIS is. And of course, then we have this prolonged scene of Rose wanting to get away. The Doctor goes in the TARDIS, and then Rose goes in the TARDIS, and then Rose comes out of the TARDIS, walks around it, and goes back in again. And
love that reaction. I really love that.
Yes.
I like the scene where she runs in, the camera follows her from behind. That's the first time, obviously, in Doctor Who that you go from outside in, because it was always ever a cut shot from the inside of the TARDIS. And then a cut shot to the doors as they walked out. This is the first time we actually follow a character into the TARDIS console.
Well, Master.
Oh, God. Apart from maybe in the movie. I'm talking about BBC Doctor Who here.
BBC were involved in the film, well, so technically.
Yeah, starting in the movie, we actually had the doors be the same doors on the inside as the out.
Okay.
So, yeah, because before they were all the big white doors, weren't they? They were on the sides of the blue doors, which I could never work that.
That always bothered me.
Yeah, it really got me as well.
Yeah. But the fact that I loved it, this console room is a beautiful console room, and when having been to the Doctor Who experience twice, and you can actually see this, you know, in the flesh, it was quite exciting to see that.
It's got flesh on it.
Pardon?
It's got flesh on it.
Stop being silly.
Oh, that was it. It was coral, not flesh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, the Doctor puts plastic Mickey's head onto the console, and then things start going a bit funny. And then they end up on the banks of the River Thames with... and then we have another conversation about the Doctor and his past and stuff.
The North.
Yeah, because they have a bit of a bicker, don't they? A bit sort of a la... who was the other ones that used to bicker a lot, but kept it going?
Ace, usually. Yeah.
No, there was the Doctor and a companion. They were always bickering, weren't they? We always used to remark about the bickering.
Was it Six and Parrot?
Sorry?
Six and Parrot, yes.
Six and Parrot.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course it was, yeah.
Oh, how we forget. That wasn't that long ago.
Because you lot were talking over each other, it broke up, and it sounded like you said Six and Harry. And I'm trying to think, I don't remember Six being with Harry.
I thought they said the Monty Python parrot.
Anyway, so they have this...
By the way, he's dead.
What is?
The Monty Python parrot.
Yeah, we knew that. But this was established quite a long time ago.
Did he get the better?
He ceased to be...
Anyway, so the Doctor has got this anti-plastic in a tube, which he doesn't really want to give them, but he's got it there as a backup plan. And he's trying to work out how they're getting the signal out to all... get the signal out.
Absolutely brilliant.
And yes, it is brilliant. He's standing there with the London Eye in the background.
A big round wheel. Where would you find a big round wheel?
Fantastic. And then they...
Of course, I was...
in the centre of London, yes.
Yeah. And they eventually find it into the inner sanctum of the Nestine, where the Doctor does his typical, I must have a conversation just with the big baddie to try and talk them out of their being big baddiness. Mickey's there. He's fine. He's been a bit of a wimp in this particular story, and he doesn't stay that way, thankfully. But unfortunately the Doctor gets overcome by some, well, basically gets pinned back, and everybody's trapped. And Rose tries calling Jackie to say, get home, but she wants to go for a little bit of a shop. No, Mum, don't do that. No, the sort of temptation to go into Primark is always too much for a woman, I'm afraid. And off she goes for a bit of shop, and all the mannequins start being activated. And there's a scene in which, obviously, that brilliant bit where the hand flops down and the gun appears. And we don't actually see Clive get shot. We presume he's done, because he doesn't appear in the rest of the story. But I always thought at the time, oh, great, bring him back, because he was a really good character.
Yes.
But we don't see him again.
Yeah, he was.
Of course, all hell breaks loose, and very good scenes of scary scenes of... mannequins going around attacking people. And I thought the most sinister mannequins are the ones in the shop window dressed as brides.
They're the worst, with that weird wig that they're all wearing.
Yeah.
And a piece of trivia is that scene of the mannequins dressed as brides was the very first thing that they shot this block.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Doctor is sort of looking rather helpless.
Wow. This is interesting. TARDISfandom.com has a whole lot of background on Clive. He was 2 years old when his father was involved in the Shoreditch incident and was subsequently exterminated by an Imperial Dalek.
Okay.
It's from a book, apparently.
Okay. Anyway, so the Doctor's rather stuck and looks, give his big cow eyes to Rose, who then takes over and does a bit of gymnastics and knocks a few Nestine over. The anti-plastic falls into the vat. So eventually it was Rose that saved the day.
You've missed an important bit out there, mate.
Which was?
the whole bit where the doctor was talking to Rose about how she could do it.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I missed that, because Kirby was talking, when the videos were on, Kirby was talking about nonsense in between there and there. Sorry, I missed that story, Ben.
Another bit where you kind of thought, who is this doctor? Ah. Yeah.
Who is the doctor? Like, that's the whole point of the show, isn't it?
No, it's Doctor Who.
So Rose saves the day, and then of course we have that scene where there's a bit of a, they start staggering around and falling over, and a bit of a mess and everything, and then and Rose comes out the TARDIS, and I'm going to move forward a little bit, phones a mum up, mum's fine, and then finds Mickey, who's being a bit pathetic. And then the doctor invites Rose to come and travel with him. She says, nah, because old Mickey's holding onto her leg. And off he goes. And then he comes back and says, oh, did I mention it also travels in time? Now, that could have been my quote as well, but it wasn't. And then she slow motion runs into the TARDIS. And that's basically the end of the story. Now we move into the what we thought of it stakes. Now, because this is a bit like the modern day Daleks. Now, I say this because Doctor Who, when it started, it was the Daleks, the second Doctor Who story, which sealed its longevity. This, straight away, when it's been rebooted, has sealed its longevity. Although there's another story to come later on in the series that does that even more.
Dalek.
The time they had, for this episode, they've done everything. They've paced it correctly. They've inserted enough of the Doctor's past, but also to keep it slightly mysterious for the long-term fans. That the new fans may not have actually been interested in. They brought in some brilliant new characters, although, like I said, I didn't like Mickey at this stage. Obviously, we grow to like him as none time goes on. They've got a very iconic Doctor straight away. Got it right with this.
They had a great Doctor and a red-hot assistant.
A what?
Red hot assistant.
All right. Anyway, so I love it. It's not my favourite, but I love it because of what it is. It's brought Doctor Who back in fine style, and enough that Doctor Who fans don't have to hide in the shadows anymore, and they can come out and say, "Oh, look, well, we've been Doctor Who fans for years. You've just been Doctor Who fans for 45 minutes." So it's a really, really, really good story. What did you think of it, Ben?
I thought it was a fantastic revival. It ticked every box it needed to get everyone who wanted to watch it and get involved in it. You didn't need to know the history, but if you did, there were little nods to it. The story was great. A bit silly, obviously, but that's what it was about. It kind of like got it back to what it should be. Well, it should always have been, really.
Lighthearted.
It was fantastically written. As you said, Christopher Eccleston, it was just a brilliant Doctor. And as everyone always says, we should have seen a lot more of him. And as I said last week, it would be lovely, too, if we could.
We're certainly going to hear more of him.
Billy Piper was brilliant. It was the first time we really had the family of the... companion, if you like, involved in it so much, and obviously that then followed through entirely. Never really got to move it or go into their houses before, and obviously later on have Christmas dinner with them and stuff like that, but this episode, it was a fantastic start to the rebooted series. There's not a lot you could really say wasn't very good about it, because it's incredibly watchable, and that was the thing about it at the time. The whole series was just watchable. So, short but sweet, but it was, brilliant episode. 9.8 stars.
I mean, the thing about this one is that everybody knew that everybody would be watching it. Doctor Who fans and casual viewers heard about Doctor Who. So they got it right because it retained those new viewers, and then those new viewers would be telling, well, Doctor Who was really good, you might as well watch that. And of course then the interest in the series built up throughout its run.
There was a lot of promo in the weeks before the final week.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. It was inundated, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it really was. You know, Doctor Who's... What is it? Oh, God, I hadn't seen it. You know, you could not know it was on. And that obviously helped because they made it look in those trailers. The trailers are online.
The initial trailers
when they came back, it was just like, this is the best thing you're ever going to watch. And for 15 years, you know, we haven't had any apart from the movie.
Because everybody spent so long as well telling people who hadn't grown up with Doctor Who what it was like to grow up with Doctor Who. So there's a whole generation of kids that have joined it as adults who didn't see it as kids cowering behind sofas. Mm. But having watched Isla cowering behind cushions because she can't get behind the sofa is just terrific.
Yeah. Robert Vince Jr. says, hi, everyone. And then he says, yes, it was fun. Talking about the podcast, obviously, not the roast. then he said the nice thing family went through the David Tennant era. The family thing went through the data, and still to today, they've never really sort of given up on it, have they? Right then, so are you done, Ben?
Affirmative, master.
Therefore,
if you're licking my catchphrases.
That's what he said.
Debbie, what did you think? Debbie.
Yes.
What did you think?
Well, I've seen this God knows how many times now, and each time absolutely love it. Christopher Eccleston is sublime as the Doctor through this whole series, and it's season series, whatever. And accept him from the word run. That's it. He's the Doctor. You totally accept him. That's what I remember. Because I can remember when this came on and we'd been waiting. I did a tea that you could deliberately have sat on your lap with, you know, the easiest food to eat because we'd been late home from work before this came on.
You can have any tea on your lap if you don't want a plate.
Well, that's true. But to avoid the mess, I put a bowl in between it. And
good idea. You've learned from last time, then.
We literally sat down. Doctor Who started. This is before you could pause live TV, and the block of flats fire alarm went off. Mm. We missed the first 20 minutes, half an hour. Luckily, it was repeated the next day in the morning because they did that.
Yeah.
And It was good to catch up with it. So I sort of had the last half of it and then started it again. And it was brilliant. Even just coming to it halfway through, I think it was just after Mickey had turned into plastic.
Yeah.
I'd realised what was going on really quite quickly. It was like, yes, I really like this. And then watched the whole thing. Watching it again over the years, it hasn't lost anything. It hasn't lost a thing. The music is terrific. The acting is brilliant. The characters are right there, are there already. Obviously, watching it again from the beginning, and Mickey's journey through his whole time on Doctor Who is fantastic. To watch him go from this hunting
in
with
End of Time.
Martha Jones, his wife, you know, it's like just a beautiful story arc. So getting to see him again as the chicken is just fantastic. And the special effects are brilliant. One of my favourite bits is in the restaurant when he pops the cork and the guy, his head ends up on the table and the guy screams the place down.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. Just little small things throughout were just absolutely brilliant. But Eccleston, it was such a shame. It was just one season and he was...
Don't fret, Debbie. This is
phenomenal.
The first episode of the season.
That's what I was about to say. I'm very eager to hear the big finish stuff. I really am. I'm so pleased he's back.
Yes.
But brilliant. Love it. Looking forward to more to come.
Marvellous. Kirby, what did you think?
Master. I absolutely love this story. I can put a DVD in, or nowadays I can put on HBO Max and just watch this anytime I want, and I will. I do.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing about it that I really am embarrassed about is the wheelie bin. Interesting thing happened the other night when I was watching it.
You fell in a wheelie bin? I was watching it
in the family room with Fred. And my wife was in the other room, and she's not really a Doctor Who fan. And she apparently heard the TARDIS dematerialize and then come back at the very end, and she pokes her head in and goes, "He's coming back?" I think I might have. And she finished the entire scene, watching the scene. I might be able to convince her to watch.
For all these years, Kirby.
I really have nothing bad to say about this one at all. As far as seeing it for the first time, of course, it was almost 11 months between the time that you saw it and Americans saw it on the Sci-Fi channel. But of course, I managed to get a hold of the famous copy that Ben was alluding to.
Yes. I didn't have nothing off set.
And I managed to watch the entire series that way.
BBC were not happy about that bootleg.
I don't remember exactly when. I didn't have time to look up the dates because I'm sure I wrote them down. But I was repairing a dishwasher this afternoon. But I know it was at least a month after you guys saw it before I was able to see it. And I was vaguely aware that it was coming back. And I was very, very happy when I took my nice semi-illegal copy, started watching it, and just fell in love with the way the Doctor Who was back.
Yes.
It was back.
Yeah. Oh, is that it? Well, thank you, Kirby. We'll say that...
Come on now, Adam. No, he's just done his great big passionate thing, and you've gone, all right, cheers, mate. Next.
No, it just got me thinking that...
a little bit of reaction, a little bit of...
I am giving a bit of reaction, thank you very much.
It's called Dark and Light, Adam.
Giving reaction, if you let me get a word in edgeways.
Reaction was, Mary.
No. I didn't say Mary. I'd never say Mary.
You were about to.
No, I wasn't. I was about to say that when Kirby alluded to his wife poking her head round the door and watching the end of it, it reminded me of the fact that since... my family here realised that we were about to start watching the new stuff. They're very keen on joining in until they get bored of it. I'll let you know when they get bored of it. God knows when that'll be. But anyway, but the disappointing part for them is only watching one episode a week, which is obviously what we're going to be doing. And as soon as Rose is out of the way, Deb was very keen to get the next episode going.
It's not 2005 anymore, Adam. You can watch them all at the same time.
I want to feel it
makes people want to watch more.
Yeah, but I mean, I want to get that week by week feeling like we've done throughout this journey. It's
I agree.
The way it was done, to a certain extent, apart from the fact we're watching the whole story when it was classic, it was a whole story in a week rather than an episode a week. Anyway, it's now time for what the peepers. What the people tune into this show for.
Yes.
Eventually. Thank you. Extremely slow jingle. I'll get me tongue and teeth sorted out.
I'll say nothing.
Mary, what did you think of this?
I'm going to disappoint because in a phrase, I loved it.
Hang on. That's got to be worth one of these. I pressed the wrong button.
Now, before you continue, Mary, unfortunately, Adam, you do realise you've just broken lots and lots of rules by playing that because it's longer than 6 seconds.
But I created this piece.
It doesn't matter if you created it. You didn't write it, and therefore you don't own the copyright for it. So on a podcast, you're allowed to play 6 seconds of music
before
you start.
But I have a PRS licence.
You have a PRS, like, and do you log your PRS?
I've got a license. What do you mean log it?
Well, you've got to log what you've played, otherwise...
Yeah, you need to log what you play.
Oh, be quiet! Get on with the blooming thing.
Anyway,
Mary.
My point is, I've got a really nice short one I can send you if you want, and it's better than that one, too.
That's what he said.
I've got a short
he's
one,
he's been using
thank
this
you.
One for a long
I've
time.
I've got this one.
Yeah, I know, but I can't send it if it's
are you going to turn him in?
Oh, no, excuse me.
I'm going to send him a decent edit.
I've got this one. What's wrong with this one?
No.
What's wrong with that? That's all. But I like the long one for very special occasions, like when Mary
that's
likes
what
something.
She said. Oh, thank you. I'm here all night.
Mary, sorry, Neil James says, yes, Mary, you absolute legend. Continue.
One line just made me laugh out loud, and it followed the doctor while he's walking with Rose and explaining to her how the nesting conscious was activating all the plastic, and he was listing, you know, wires, cords, and she pipes up with, and breast implants.
Oh, yes.
The image that brought to mind just made me laugh. But I want to take a side road here and celebrate the female heroes of Doctor Who.
Yes.
We all recognize that Verity Lambert was the reason we get to see the classic Doctor Who, how she got that off the ground and going. And in the same category, I want to celebrate Julie Gardner.
Hurrah! Sorry, can we have a hallelujah there?
For years and years, and when I read the whole history of all that went on in trying to get Doctor Who relaunched again, there were many failed attempts, people who just didn't want to cooperate, people who had their own ideas, and one of those was the Scream of the Shalka. They thought bringing it back as an animated series would be a good idea, but that didn't go down very well. But so with everything going on, and then the BBC not having any of its own recording facilities and that, Julie Gardner was a production manager of BBC Wales, where they were doing all these little small, you know, Welsh-only programs, some of them bilingual and all that. But Russell T. Davies was taking advantage of her production facility to make something that he was in, that he wrote and all that. Casanova, which interestingly enough, you know, starred David Tennant.
Yeah,
which is why DT got the job.
Indeed.
And he had done a lot of things in America, and he had picked up a lot of American filming techniques that turned out to be a lot cheaper than how they would do things in the UK. One of the things that he did, if I can remember it right, it's called like off film camera or something. It involves the use of just a single camera doing multiple takes, and then most of the work happening in the editing room, as opposed to the traditional way the UK was doing things, where they would have like a gallery of three cameras filming one scene, you know, and then it was pretty much that was it, you know, the different takes that they would use. A lot cheaper to employ one person to edit than it was to have all those cameras and all those, you know, all those other people involved. And he was also familiar with the greater pace at which American things were filmed. So Julie Gardner, in her great wisdom and wanting to make a bigger name for herself, you know, in UK filming, talked with Russell T. Davies about the idea of bringing back Doctor Who. And he had wanted to do it for a long time, but he could never get anyone to, you know, to go along with his ideas. So it was the two of them putting their heads together, and he had a lot of demands, most of which she agreed to. And so it was Julie Gardner who got the ball rolling and brought us the new launch of Doctor Who that we just know and love today. So I just wanted to, you know, give her her due. You know, we all celebrate Verity Lambert, but I want it known that Julie Gardner was the other, you know, big hero for us. I also want to say that I think it was about 4 years ago, the Chicago TARDIS I went to had a Ninth Doctor theme. Their guests were Billy Piper, Noel Clarke, and Cordura. What's her name?
Camille Cordura.
Camille Cordura.
Yeah.
Cordura. And it was really interesting to hear them talk about how everything, you know, got started, where they were approached to that. You know, no one knew how this was going to go over. They didn't know if this would last. So everybody was just on a 1-year contract. And they were kind of doing all the filming and they're acting without, of course, any feedback. They had no idea whether this was going to sell or not. But then once it started to come out and got, you know, the huge, you know, happy reception that it did, and they wanted to make more, everybody had already signed contracts with other productions to move on after their 1 year. But so to move it on from that first, that 1 year, they either had to film around other commitments that Billy Piper and Noel Clark had made. But as we all know, Christopher Eccleston did not renew his contract. They all say he quit. Well, he didn't like break a contract. He just did not renew his 1 year contract. But apparently he had a lot of problems. And I wish I knew what those problems were.
Last week, didn't we?
No, sure. Yeah, Ben alluded to it last week, Mary.
Well, but the very people that you want to bring him back were the people that he says he had disagreements with. So that's why I just wonder.
Okay.
Didn't we also hear that Tennant didn't think that they were going to get another series when he filmed his bit with Barcelona?
No, that was tagged on. That was recorded.
David Tennant did a interview about it. And he said he got Russell T. Davis. Obviously, he was working with him and he wanted him to be the next Doctor. But it wasn't guaranteed when he filmed that bit that there was going to be another season.
Might have to ask David Tennant about that one day.
Well, yeah, because Christopher Eccleston made it known like right early on in the filming that he wasn't going to continue. And so I guess they had to get
talking to somebody else. They rewrote the story, didn't they?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that they had said that Russell T. Davis rewrote it. And did they film two endings?
Yeah, I've heard they shot two endings, yeah.
But I just wanted to say that of the people that were interviewed at Chicago TARDIS, Camille Kaduri is everything you see on that screen. She is
amazing,
sexy lady. I mean, she always dressed provocatively. She would sit provocatively, and she just was a master of the double entendre.
She's lovely. I've met
Ben
her.
Would get on
She's
with that. Her then.
Yeah, she was at one of the time gates and was. She's great.
Yeah. She was at the Brighton convention that I was at, with Sylvester McCoy.
Ah. And she's also very, very good with her Doctor Who trivia.
Oh.
Good. Okay. So anyway.
I just wanted to bring all that stuff up.
Thank you, Mary.
But yeah, I loved it. And it got me just as excited when I heard that the music at the beginning. And I thought, yay, we're going to do all this now.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yes.
It is.
Thank you very much. Ben, you said you could only stay till 8. It's 7 minutes past.
Oh, well, I haven't been called in yet.
You haven't been summoned, have you? Okay, that's good then.
Oh, hold on. It's all right. No dancing on ice is on. I'm fine.
Oh, that's all right then.
I've just given away a penalty. Well, I was fine. Oh, I'm not so far.
Yeah, we've had a request to join the group, which made me chuckle when I looked into it a bit closer. Somebody called David Willen. Now, obviously, when you join the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join, anybody watching this particular video version of the podcast will know that because they're already members. But David Willen's answer of the questions.
When you join.
This is David Willen. Who is your favourite?
I promise them that.
Oi! David Willen says, "Who is your favourite Doctor?" Abert was the answer to that one. And then it said, "What is your favourite villain?" Dockett. So there's two buttons available to me. One is approve, one is decline. There should be a third one that says beep off. So
I was going to be perfectly honest. Dockett. Oh dear, I feel a story coming on.
So anyway, yes, so that's it for what we thought of it. Kirby posted a request for feedback in the conventional fashion via the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join.
And get a free badge when you join it.
Don't say that.
Although we do have badges available, but that's usually for people who attend a certain convention.
Which one would that be, Adam?
Well, no comment. There's a COVID thing going on, so I tending to keep a bit quiet about it at the moment because everything's up in the air and nobody knows what's blimming going on.
We're not sure which way is up at the moment on the island, are we?
Yes. Well, right then.
Haven't you got the third highest rate of...
Yes, that's because the ferry services decided, let everybody from Tier 3 and 4 come over to the Isle of Wight, which was Tier 1, and infect everyone. Thanks, ferry services.
People. You're just a dirty man. You've got no idea about social distancing. Or I've seen you lot before. Don't you try and tell me that's not true. I was on the island 2 years ago.
All right,
I'm still getting over it.
Be quiet. Right, go on then, Kirby. I'm excited to hear what Kirby has to say. That doesn't happen very often, does it?
I've been waiting.
Waiting for
what? Oh, gosh. So impatient, you.
Sorry, yes. Kirby. I'll finish now.
Yes, Doctor.
You tell Kirby.
Robert,
go on, mate. It's your go now. You have the floor. Just waiting for you to go.
Maybe I should just go upstairs and check on the dishwasher.
You're a master, Ben.
A master what?
I'll master Ben. Worse.
Oh, dear.
Go on, Kurt.
Now.
Of course, as I said before, I use the...
Anytime you...
The website, Clive's website, as the picture on the front. And so Robert Haynes had the very first response. He said, is that picture supposed to be Eccles cake? And Kirsty has a picture of what I think is an Eccles cake.
It is an Eccles cake or two. Yes, Kirby, that's
okay.
Right.
And Robert says now he wants one.
I think you could have skipped all that.
Yeah, okay, that's fine, really whatever. Not feedback, is it, Kirby?
Alan T. Butcher thinks it might have been photoshopped. And he says, of the 6 pilot episodes in Doctor Who history, not the best, but perhaps the most effective.
Yes.
Michael Tonis says, I saw a man like that run off with some woman towards a call box. and Robert Wentz Jr. gives a picture, and then he says, I hope you use for your quote the doctor's speech while he holds Rose's hand. That's my favorite part of the episode. I did not.
No.
And his review of Rose.
Yes.
Back in 2005, there was an illegal copy put out on the internet.
What?
And I was able to watch it on my computer.
That's appalling.
Rose/Billy Piper plays a shop worker who runs into the newly regenerated doctor. The doctor is here to stop the plastic people known as the Autons. The doctor and Rose run into each other, and he tells her to leave when he blows up her workplace to deactivate the Autons. Skipping ahead, he finds the nesting consciousness with the help of Rose. The nesting blames the doctor/Christopher Eccleston for the destruction of its planet because of the Time War. It doesn't say exactly Time War, but...
He implies it.
He implies it, yes. An Auton grabs the doctor and the anti-plastic. Rose knocks the vial from the Auton's hands, kills the nesting consciousness. Rose goes on to travel with the new doctor. A fun and entertaining story, a little slow at the beginning, but it picked up the pace. RTD decided to use the Buffy model of season-long story arcs around a big bad villain. Over 10.8 million viewers watched this story. The London Eye was used as the hideout of the nesting consciousness. Humor and the action, plus adding the family connection, was okay. It's sad that Clive had to die because of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. My rating is 4 out of 5. And he has a picture of the London Eye.
Yes.
I'm going to skip someone's script.
Yes.
Neil James. Rose. What a very special episode.
Indeed.
The pressure was on. And it had so much that it needed to get right. And it was mostly succeeded. What it does really well is intros. During the fast-paced opening montage, we meet Rose, Jackie, and Mickey. And after just a few short moments, we know these characters. And we are instantly thrown into a horror film. I love the Autons. They're brilliantly introduced and creepy as hell. And this brings up the two most important introductions, the Doctor, Ron, and the TARDIS. I love how the TARDIS is just casually hanging out in the street looking cool, and the Doctor is officially back in business.
It was the hat.
Yeah.
I adore the Doc and Rose's walk and talk through the estate that ends with his wonderful speech. The script does really well juggling the humor and horror. I'm still shocked they killed Clive.
Has he got over it yet?
That's a long time ago. Come on.
From a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're allowed to grieve and everything.
The music is superb and the direction is great. I do have some issues. I don't like the TARDIS door being given a creak. Sorry.
No, I like that.
I like that.
Yeah.
It still has it.
Yeah.
Clive's photos of the Doctor look awful. That's intentional. And the finale is a bit clunky. But my biggest problem is Mickey. He does get better as the series moves along, but here he is a huge misstep and seems to belong in a different show. Then just when I think he can't get any worse, we get Plastic Mickey. Not good, but it doesn't matter because of two very incredible people. For me, Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper are pure gold. I love everything about them here, and I firmly believe that they're the reason this worked and why Doctor Who is still a thing 16 years later.
Yeah.
Has it been that long? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Watching Rose in 2005 was a joy, and although it's not perfect, I'll always have a lot of love for this episode. 4 stars out of 5.
Well, it's interesting you said about the plastic Mickey, obviously,
pizza.
Pizza. No, the plastic Mickey. It's the potential for, action figures to be a bit more realistic.
To be even more plasticky, yeah.
The only other two posts in the thread are I brought up archive.org's archive of search-wise.net.
Marvelous.
And also the Third Doctor in the Nesting Consciousness with the Third Doctor gurning.
I was almost going to make a reference about the creaking doors. It used to be the sets that used to creak in the old days. So I haven't got a problem with the creaking door.
I have no problem whatsoever with the creaking door.
No. Right. Let's see. I'm just waiting for Google Gmail thingy to load up, see what we've got on there.
Ooh. Oh, by the way, I pulled out my 2005 and 2006 calendars and was leafing through them. I have no record of when I saw Doctor Who, so I don't know.
Thank you for filling that 30 seconds that I didn't actually need
I'm
filling.
Sure people were wondering.
No, they weren't.
You couldn't even write it down.
We have this.
Well, good afternoon, Twiggy McMartins. It's quarter past 3 on Sunday afternoon, sitting here with a nice cup of tea. Only 17 days to go. And I watched Rose yesterday. Now, I've been waiting avidly when it first came on. I was really building this at the time. I sat in my settee waiting Saturday night, waiting to come along. And 50 minutes later, we weren't disappointed. I think it really, Doctor Who was back. In a way, there's some similarities to the first ever episode, because you didn't get to see the Doctor for quite a while. It was other people. It was the companions you saw, or in this case, the one companion. I think what was really good about that is actually built a backstory for Rose. You understand who she was, where she was, why she was there. I didn't meet the Doctor, and the way the Doctor came in, he was a man of mystery. I love the goes in and go away, oh, by the way, I'm Doctor, run. Yeah. I mean, it was... Yeah, that's just Doctorish. And also, to hark back to the first ever Doctor Who story I can remember seeing, I'm slightly older than Adam, and I can remember the first story being Spearheads of Space when I'd be 4 and a half in January 1970. Yes, I am that old. And with the Autons.
I'm older.
Now, this story, very strong. I think you had a lot of credible characters. There was the, obviously, you had the Doctor who's coming back, and if you want to jump in, didn't know about the Doctor, you pretty soon, you started finally learning more about him. It didn't matter you didn't know about Gallifrey, because at that time that wasn't really relevant. But you started to understand who he was and what he was doing. With Rose, you know, again, they brought her a good backstory with her mother. Mickey, not yet, but he was coming along. And then you had the private investigator. Yeah, that's interesting. It's a pity they didn't keep that going, the Doctor appearing at other times. You know, there's different points in time, you know, but father and son, but then he actually realised, yes, he's the same person, he's immortal. Actually, not too far off that. I just wonder that. I think that's something they could use again, you know, place the Doctor in different times and being spotted and people wondering who he is. I mean, overall, it was a very strong story. There were some great touches. I mean, what was interesting, of course, is a lot of where it was filmed in London was where, well, I'm used to work, I think I have to say, because at the moment, of course, I'm working in the kitchen, but my normal workplace is near the House of Parliament. You look at Westminster Bridge and all down the riverbank, the South Bank. That's places I've run, I've walked, I've cycled. You know, it's that's what brings it home to me, but you know, is where it's somebody that you know you can really relate to. The use of London Eye and the great where the doctor took three goes to understand what Rose is telling you about the London Eye. It was good. It's fairly obvious they're going to use the anti-plastic and then Rose was going to somehow come to his help and didn't quite anticipate her doing the swinging like Tarzan through it. Mickey was a bit feeble and wet, wasn't he? But then I suppose he got better towards the end. One thing you never understood, what the Autons are actually trying to do, not to the extent you perhaps did with Spearhead and Terror of the Autons. You know, they wanted the planet going to kill people off, but was this only happening in London? Was this happening worldwide? I mean, if it just happened in London and the rest of the world came to know about it, then I wouldn't have thought it'd be on the wit and wisdom of the world's armies to put pay to the, what presumably was an Estine intelligence. You know, and would they have known about it? I mean, UNIT presumably were still around then, weren't they? They'd have known about it. So that was perhaps the only weak spot, but certainly I sat there at the end of it and thought, yeah. The Doctor is back. Be seeing you.
That's Andy Nunney, everybody.
Yay!
Neil James has said, I'll never get over Clive's death. So that answers that one. What else we got here? Oh, I guess I've got to get this bit here. And then do this. And and lose the thing and try not to attract any attention from Ben from this particular part of the show. We've got.
Sorry, I'm really wrapped up in a European final between Paris Saint-Germain and Inter.
Send him Alan's feedback.
No, I'm not going to do that. We want it read properly. Alan will be very disappointed. but I do have this. Oh, hang on, I pressed the wrong thing.
Slick's
back in.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast, this is Ian Kirk. Rose by Russell T. Davies. The story is seen from the point of view of Rose. It begins with just another day for Rose. She works in a department store in London. She has to take the lottery money to Wilson, the electrician, and is attacked by shop dummies come to life. This is 2005, so we have the internet and Clive, who has a web page with his research on the Doctor. The story introduces the Doctor, his time machine, and the sonic screwdriver. He is sympathetic to the alien creature and wants to negotiate. He is contemptuous of humanity in general, and Mickey in particular. Some people are sceptical of pop singer Billy Piper's abilities, but she is very good in Doctor Who. Eccleston makes a very good Doctor. The recurring theme of the Time War and its effect on various civilizations in the universe is mentioned briefly. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian.
Yeah, thanks, Ian.
Yeah.
I love the tone of your voice, Mary, because you know what I've just sent you.
All right. You want me to read it
now? Terry Miles feedback.
Yes, and he writes, Rose was the first Doctor Who for quite a lot of people. This was the program that their parents had gone on about, and after watching this episode, a lot became fans. Christopher Eccleston nailed it as the Doctor. There was an outcry before it was shown on TV about his companion, the title character played by Billy Piper. She was Billy, a pop star who had been married to the DJ Chris Evans at an early age. She would be an absolute disaster. Oh, how they were proved wrong.
She was honey to the bee.
The story was a great reintroduction to the show. Thank God they didn't use the Daleks. Spoilers, they come later. The use of shop dummies has been used before in the 1971 story Terror of the Autons. Obviously, Rose doesn't take much notice of Mickey. She didn't notice when he couldn't drive and looked like plastic after he had been binned. At last, we see the Nestine consciousness, voiced by the great Nick Briggs. They were also seen in Spearhead from space. Naughty Rose gets to terminate it. Mickey was as useful as a chocolate teapot in the fight at the end. Why was he cuddling the TARDIS? No wonder Rose went off with the Doctor.
Indeed.
Yeah, there's that phrase, all planets have a north. The pedants among us might say that Pratchett's Discworld only had a rim and a hub. Jackie is beginning to annoy me. All in all, a fantastic episode. Stay safe, everyone. Linda and Terry Miles.
Thank you, Linda and Terry.
Jackie's beginning to annoy me.
Oh, something's going to annoy Debbie because she's got some blurb too.
I have. The Secret Diary of a Shop Girl or Clive and His Nutters. Dear 20 megabyters. Rose is, of course, a closely studied cautionary tale of the dangers, now better appreciated, of the proliferation of plastics. Whereas previously the nesting consciousness had to organise distribution mechanisms to spread its plastics so that it had the reach it needed, by now plastic is ubiquitous, and all that is required to take control is to broadcast its consciousness strongly enough to vivify the plastic that saturates the planet.
Including breast implants.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine that. Clearly, the influence the Nestine expects to gain mirrors the impact of plastic pollution affecting our planet. It should be noted that while some were fearing what Billie Piper would be like in this role, their concerns were confounded, and she was compelling and successful, which I guess is why nobody ever fell into the trap again of judging a casting decision or seeing the performance.
Yes, they did. And still do.
Never happened.
Butcher is a fine art and a fine study in understatement. Come on. Yes. We also learn that having tried to create itself into a perfect creature to take over the planet previously, the Nestine consciousness is now happy to wallow in a vat and grumble really vaguely about the effects of the time war. All in all, Rose is a relatively perfunctory story, which is what was needed as the effective pilot backdrop for the reintroduction of Doctor Who. By effectively only having to tell half a story, time is made to present the key elements of the show which the viewer needs to encounter. Care is also taken to limit these introductions to those which are fundamental and necessary. Very significant matters are not addressed at this point because they don't need to be. The Nestine consciousness reprises its role in a Doctor Who pilot that was first seen with the Third Doctor, and as a strong idea, making something ordinary dangerous, it fulfills an ideal role as the sort of threat Doctor Who does best. Following Rose herself from the beginning sensibly mirrors the technique used in An Unearthly Child in 1963. While some of the speeded up action at the start seems a bit twee, it does stop this section from being ponderous, getting us more quickly to the Doctor. The Doctor himself is slightly manic, but is identifiable, and he has a beautiful turning of the earth speech, beautifully acted, right in the middle of the episode to give him gravitas. Whilst confident, however, the Doctor does perhaps manifest his damaged condition by his failure here, by getting into a situation where he does need to be saved. On the other hand, this very helpfully provided a space in the narrative for Rose to shine and save him. This story is perhaps one episode too short, as it would much benefit in terms of introducing the show by being coupled with the following episode. Next up, Doctor Who and the Vertical Trampoline Lady, or What Do the Ewok Know About the Time War? Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
I like the trampoline lady.
I have some advice for Alan, because he does seem to find it very difficult finding the comments just right next to the M on the keyboard to the right. Alan, okay? It's the comma.
Listen, everyone. Alan's being critical.
What a shock.
We also have this little bit of audio from a certain Kirsty Bissett.
Hello, 20 megabiters. It's Kirsty here with my review of Rose. Sorry I can't be there. I will be back next week with any luck. But I'm just finishing up on a play I've been involved in called Irma Bombeck at Wit's End, which starred 220 megabiters. Yes, I want to say thank you to Mary and thank you to Matthew for loaning their lovely voices to our show and made it all that much better.
I would have done it.
Thanks to the both of you for helping out with the show. And now on to the review. It was interesting going back and watching this after so many years. I've dipped back into the story occasionally just for, you know, just something to watch. And it's not bad. It's a nice kickoff onto what we have now. It was a good starting point. It brought the show back. Obviously, we're still going. And there's a couple of missteps. But the only missteps I find, the only things I don't really like about it are Christopher Eccleston. I know partway through me kind of latching onto him as my as the new doctor, he quit. Or at least that's what the paper said, etc. So I started kind of not liking him so much. And I still don't really gel with him all that much. But he is very doctorish. I mean, he is the doctor. He's just not one of the ones I like the most. Rose is great. And, yeah. The only thing I don't like is burping wheelie bins. I wish fans would shut up about it. It's one burping wheelie bin. And everybody likes to hang their hat on the burping wheelie bin. Yeah. And it's just really silly.
It is.
It's kind of like poking Christopher Eccleston with a stick every time he does something Doctor Who related, asking him, hey, you going to come back to the show? I know you said no 50 times, but let's poke you again to make sure.
But he is.
Anyway, a little rant over. But no, it's a grand start. It's not a fantastic, you know, wonderful story, but it does the job. It pulled the people in, and everybody was like, this thing's cool. I want to see what happens next week. And off we went on this wonderful adventure that is still going to this day. So it can't be all bad. So I've got to go in and deal with Irma Bombeck and those two 20 megabiters that I have to push their buttons every night.
Oh.
Is that bad to say I push Matthew and Mary's buttons every night?
Anyway.
So, just me signing off. I will see you next time. Talofa lava.
Yeah, thank you, Kirsty.
Still not working.
No. Well, we also have Robert Haynes, who says, okay, here's my feedback on Rose. Now, I haven't seen this since the DVD set was released, and I don't think, unless I did it with you guys one time, I can't remember that. Kirby will, though. I quite enjoyed the revisit. It's full of pace, though one thing did strike me, especially compared with Classic Who, it is how it seemed more aimed at kids, which made Jackie's attempt at seducing the Doctor seem out of place. That's probably for the parents, though. Things I weren't a fan of were the stupid robot acting of the Autons dancing like it was the 80s, and Mickey's fight with the garbage bin, then that stupid comedy burp. No, just no. And of course, we've got farting Slitheens to look forward to. No spoilers there, eh, Robert? Because nobody's seen these episodes, of course. And I didn't like the giving the Nestine consciousness a face either. Otherwise, it was a good introduction to Doctor Who for newcomers, a good intro for Chris Eccleshake, as he says, who hit the ground running, literally, and Rose, who probably surprised quite a few people who thought she was just a singer. Good to see the sonic screwdriver being used sparingly and not as a magic wand and stroke or weapon. It has, as it seems to have become these days. Looking forward to watching more. I almost put on the next episode to watch as I was enjoying things. Well, we did as well, but we're going to, you know, keep it sparing ourselves. Thank you, Robert. All right. So nothing's come through on the live feed, which allows me to move on to the next segment of the show, which will probably prove
next
to be fruitless. I was thinking about doing the sponsors, but I'm not going to do that yet. I'll do that in a minute. Right, Doctor Who News.
Doctor Who News. This is Doctor Who News.
Time-space visualizer Zoom starts today, as in today. It's bringing the Doctor Who Phantom Convention experience to your home for free in 2021. On Sunday the 17th of January, it's Katie Manning. Wednesday the 20th of January, Mark Strickson. Sunday the 24th of January, TBA. Ooh, what does that stand for? Terence Bryan Adams?
it's actually his middle name.
Yeah, there you go. Wednesday the 27th, Annette Badland and Eric Potts, and Sunday the 31st, Bonnie Langford. There you go, Mary. Want to meet one of your heroes online? If you go to DoctorWhoNews.net, this particular feature at the top of the page, there's a link if you want to get booked for that. Okay. I suspect it's free to go on, but you have to pay to get signed things. I don't know. New Target releases, Kirby.
Yay!
Yeah. Doctor Who The Pirate Planet by Douglas Adams and James Goss. Resurrection of the Daleks by Eric Saywood. And then and then Revelation of the Daleks by Eric Saward. Then the TV movie by Gary Ruthel. Dalek by Robert Sherman, friend of the show. The Crimson Aura by Mark Gatiss.
Yay!
Friend of me and Deb, because we met him at... The Witchfinders by Joy Wilkinson, which is a 13th Doctor story.
So that,
in the world of Ben Shoveler, that does not exist.
Sorry I heard me mentioned. I'm now in the middle of a really tough league game against Calvary.
Oh, God. That's about it.
Because
the previous thing on the Doctor Who News thing we talked about last week. So that was a quick feature. It was all very, very good to get through quick features. Now, because it's been so long since I mentioned the sponsors, there's got to be something to talk about on their website. So I'm going to go to whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Time Lord Victoria's Genetics of the Daleks.
Sorry, Adam.
Yes?
What's that website you've just gone to?
It's whowon.co.uk. Time Lord Victoria.
Is it whowon.co.uk?
Deb?
Yeah?
Can you tell them off in that voice you do, which they know they've been told off, but it doesn't sound too ferocious?
What, the one when I say, wouldn't it be nice if we could all just sort of get along?
So Time Lord Victoria. Oh, shut up! Time Lord Victorious, Genetics of the Daleks, which on the cover I can see at the Fourth Doctor. It's a big Finnish production by Jonathan Morris.
Sorry, Adam.
What?
Is that Who Won?
Yep. Wicked Sisters, which is a fifth... Actually, what is it? Is it fifth,
I think it's whowon.co.uk.
I'm trying to see if it's on the cover.
Whowon.co.uk.
Ooh, that looks good. I'm ignoring you. And the Doctor is recruited by Leela for a vital mission on behalf of the Time Lords. Together, they must track down and destroy two godlike beings with extraordinary powers and now threaten all of space and time. These beings are already known to the Doctor. Their names are Abby and Zara. Now, on the picture, on the cover, you've got Peter Davison and you've got Louise Jameson, who's a sort of a friend of mine because I've had various conversations with her over the phone and stuff. Oh, and friend of the show.
This goes back to the Key to Time series where the fifth on audio where the Doctor meets up with Abby and her sister. They're called Graceless. There's a whole series of releases of the two sisters, so this is a continuation of them.
Where can you get that from? Jesus Christ. Anyway, right, Doctor Who magazine special 56 2021 yearbook, which is for $6.99, amongst other things, Adventures in London, 13th Doctor Story, which doesn't exist in Ben Shoveler's world, and Time Lord of Victorious 3, Mutually Assured Destruction, which looks like it features the 8th Doctor. Yeah, apparently, if you count them, including John Hurt's Doctor, there's 13. Oh, shit, there's another one. Oh, never mind, there's 13. Oh, yeah, including, what's the other one? Peter Cushing's Doctor, yes, 13 Doctors. Right, then, coming soon on whowon.co.uk, Colony of Fear, a 6th Doctor Big Finish audio, along with Grey Man of the Mountain, a 7th Doctor Big Finish audio. Masterful, which we talked about the other week, wasn't it? Which sounds really exciting. Lots and lots of masters on it. I'm quite tempted to get that. 3 discs, 180 minutes. Don't know when I'm going to get a chance to listen to it, but it's tempting. And Plight of the Pimpernel, a 6th Doctor story. And Reese and Yanto's Excellent Barbecue, which must have happened before Reese's untimely demise.
And also before the lockdown, because we haven't been...
What about our Reese?
What? About what?
What about our Reese? We haven't heard from him in ages.
Yeah, well, he's compiling his fourth volume of the Book of Excuses. so we'll probably hear from him one day when he's finished that. All right, then. So after that, we move on to lavazi.co.uk.
Oh, they make really good scarves, they do.
Actually, we were saying
my best
something.
Scarf.
We were sent something from Lavazzi a few days ago. I can't remember what it was now. Sorry about that, Melinda. Christmas is over, so if you go to the Lavazzi website, you'll find a few items on sale via the Doctor Who page. And, of course, if you join their mailing page, you get lots and lots of very interesting offers come via the email system. And you can also, if you're a fan of writing, they're very interested to publish fan fiction via their blog page. So a great service for Doctor Who fans and fans of Star Trek and stuff. And people that don't like either, because they also sell normal clothes. There we go. Okay. Last one I'm going to mention is iwheroes.co.uk. They've got a load of good stuff came in this week via Rob's video. The thing that caught my eye was the I Am Groot, the Groot massive Funko Pop, which is it's probably about 18 inches tall. It looks really cool. I quite like that.
I heard it's 120 meters tall.
No, it wasn't that big. Deb said
I heard it was 120 kilometers tall.
That's what she said.
Deb said, and she saw this part of the video, that Wanda and Vision figures have also arrived in. So I didn't get to see them, but that sounds quite interesting. So, which segues off into WandaVision. Anybody seen WandaVision?
Me, I have me.
I've been told to wait until...
Why?
Until the geek daughter is available to watch it with me.
You could sneak.
I've considered that, but Fred told me not to.
Right, okay. Well, I'm not going to spoil like you would, Kirby. I'm just going to say...
Oh, I'm already spoiled. I know everything that happens.
I've only seen episodes one and two.
I haven't watched it.
What is WandaVision on?
It's on Disney Plus.
Disney Plus.
WandaVision. It's Wanda and Vision.
It is. I think she probably knew that.
It's so funny.
I really enjoyed. It's not quite as funny as Deadpool or Deadpool 2, which is even funnier. But it is entertaining. We thoroughly enjoyed that.
Gave you spoilers for.
I'm not going to say anything more apart from it's very watchable and very pretty to watch. Very very beautifully written, directed, and acted. So now I'm going to move on because somebody requested a very short discussion on Star Trek Discovery's. And we're not going to talk about exactly what happened. I think they just want to know whether I liked it or not, because some people have said that it was a bit of a disappointing ending. I didn't find it disappointing at all. I expect there to be a almost like a cliffhanger for a next series. There clearly isn't going to be another series, sadly. So the way they tidied things up is quite satisfactory for me. So, but yes, it was a very, very good third series. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Anybody else want to say anything about Star Trek Discovery?
One of these days I'll watch it.
God's sake.
I won't.
I started watching it. It's on local channels here now. So, but I'm watching it from the beginning, so I'm only in the first series.
Yes, it's very dark at the beginning. It lightens up a little bit.
Turn the brightness up.
But yeah, it's very, very good. But also, like I did allude to a few moments ago, absolutely love Deadpool 1 and 2. I mean, I think it's one of those things I think I'm going to watch when I'm feeling a bit depressed. If I want a really good laugh, that's the film I'll be watching. We have watched a few bits and bobs recently. Nothing sticks to the mind at the moment, so I'll have to move on.
Although we started Red Dwarf again for the umpteenth millionth time.
Oh, it's Grange Hill. BritBox have put Grange Hill on, first four series, and it just happens to be that was on when I was in those years at school that they're depicting. So it was so like the school I was at and the teachers we had.
Because I'm a few years younger than you.
Yeah.
And, Grange Hill really was of its time, wasn't it?
The only thing it lacked was the swearing that we all did at school.
It wasn't good, though. The first few series, it was rubbish.
What?
It wasn't until probably series 4 or 5 where it actually got good. Before that, it was just... Yeah, take it or leave it, really. It was Tucker Jenkins.
Tucker Jenkins was...
He was
the Daleks of Grange Hill. No, it's great.
How
do really
you
good.
Spell it?
I-T. Grange Hill. It's probably not on the American Brit box. Anyway, Laurie Nick says...
R-A-N-G-E?
No, it's not.
Grange
it's not.
Well, it isn't. I wonder if think, why would the Americans be interested
Kirby,
in Grange Hill?
Hang on a minute. Kirby what? Spelt it right, and Mary said it wasn't on. There you go.
No, it isn't on. No, it wouldn't be. But there are Doctor Who actors within Grange Hill when they were very young. And even Alex Kingston, who's well known as River Song,
I've seen that clip.
Was in Grange Hill, but not yet. We haven't got to that episode yet. Right then, what else we're coming out? Laurie Nick said, I read all of those Vision and Scarlet Witch comics when they came out. And her whole Marvel story arc, so will not comment at this time.
Oh.
Mm. But yeah, it's quite enjoyable.
Let me just suggest to her that she look at the name on the wine bottle.
There you go. Right then, so I don't think there's anything else to really discuss on this.
Can we have a quiz?
No. No, I haven't quite got time for a quiz this week, Kirby, I'm afraid. Mainly because I haven't prepped one, and I got into trouble last week for saying I might be finished at a certain time and not finishing at a certain time.
Right.
There was a chance that Alicia and Carl were going to be on this week, but their puppy got ill. I think that got that out of Rhys Barton's first book of excuses.
Poorly.
What?
Your grandpuppy is poorly.
Yeah, the new one.
The grand puppy.
They're not watching this particular podcast or listening to it that much. So I can certainly say my suspicions are because their older dog, Nala, obviously goes out in the garden and defecates. Neither of them pick up the defecation, and they've got a little puppy. So my thoughts are suspicious the puppy might be ill because of that. Just saying. Anyway, right. So, I'll probably get into trouble for saying that. Okay, right, so next week...
Trouble for that one.
That's only if they find out. Next week it's...
It on Facebook.
Oh, shut up, Ben! Next week it's End of the World.
Your dad says...
As we know it.
Oh, it's not worth watching it then, is it?
But a few iconic characters appear in that particular story. And yes. You get to meet Captain Jack for the first... Ooh. Spoilers for the first time.
Spoilers.
Not in that one.
Oh, not in that one, apparently.
He's not in that. He's not until the war one.
He rescues Rose.
I think you'll find Captain Jack is in that story.
Not
one. But it's a much, much older Captain Jack. Think about it, Kirby.
Well, is it, though? That's never been...
There's confirmed. A hell of a big argument against it.
Yes, they never really revisited
it.
There's
a good argument for it.
Is there now?
Well, I'm for it.
Don't start him.
Jeez. No, he's backtracking a little bit there. Right. So, like I say, next week, the end of the world. So, look forward to that. Look forward to hopefully seeing you all again next week. Thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Goodbye!
Goodbye, fancy pants. Right. I've got to go up and make sure that the dishwasher still works.
Oh, how domestic of you, Cody.
Bye.
Yes, yes, bye-bye. Thank you, Ben. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Good night.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.